Hallo zum Media Lab Innovation Podcast. Ich bin Christian, ich bin Innovation Editor im Media Lab Bayern und ich bin euer Host für diese Folge. Wenn man viel mit Daten arbeitet, oder besser, wenn man mit vielen Daten arbeitet, kommen bei der Auswertung ja oft Tools zum Einsatz, um das überhaupt alles auswerten zu können. Viele dieser Tools arbeiten dann mit Methoden, die man wohl AI nennen würde oder künstliche Intelligenz, völlig unabhängig davon, wie intelligent sie dann tatsächlich sind, aber so würde man sie wahrscheinlich nennen. Und wenn man über dieses Thema spricht, ist dann auch das Thema Algorithmic Bias oft nicht weit. Also quasi die Vorurteile in den Daten, die dann zu falschen Schlussfolgerungen führen. Da gab es ja auch ein paar prominente Beispiele in der Vergangenheit. Wie man diesen Algorithmic Bias im Journalismus und im Newsroom verhindern kann, darüber spreche ich heute mit Mike Anani von der University of Southern California. Und weil er natürlich aus Kalifornien ist, wechsle ich jetzt zu Englisch. Mike, welcome on the podcast. And before I start asking questions, let me maybe just quote a little bit from your profile page of the website of the University of Southern California where you teach. It says there, you research the public ethics of communication systems, specifically intersections of journalism practice and technology design and the power of algorithmic systems. That sounds impressive, and it sounds like you're just the right person here today to talk about how we can use data better and more ethical in our newsroom. And we have talked a bit before about what the topics of this conversation should be. And one point that came up multiple times was the quality of the data we are working with. And let me just start by asking maybe a bit provocatively, why should I, as maybe a newsroom manager, why should I care about the quality of my data in the first place?
Yeah, that's a great question. And thank you very much for having me here. It's a treat to be talking with you. To answer that question, I would back up a little bit and sort of ask what data do in journalism? What is the role that data play in journalism? And I think the one big thing to keep in mind throughout all of this is that data are representations of the world. They're sort of snapshots of the world in different ways, but they're the results of what people do. People have gone out and observed things, decided what was significant, decided what to name things or how to group things or combine variables, but they've sort of made data for a reason. And so that's sort of one thing, is that we need to think about where data come from, and the data that appear in journalism always come from somewhere. The other is that data sort of have this this sort of mystique about them. They seem both mysterious and enticing and alluring at the same time, because they promise a kind of neutrality. They promise a kind of sort of disinterested image of the world. And this is often what journalists are craving, is they're craving sort of a raw, unfiltered image of the world. And so I could go on, but I would say that data are always sort of in service of something. They're always made for reasons. And as journalists, we want to ask, what are those reasons? Who made those data? Where have those data come from? And this is not to be sort of, you know, conspiratorial or think that there's some nefarious purpose behind this, but it helps journalists be better journalists if they can speak the language of data and understand where data are coming from. And there's a history of sort of where that comes from that I could go into, but there's sort of, I think that's one way to think about why data matter.
When we're talking about making a newsroom more data-driven or making data-driven newsrooms better, is there a way to express my journalistic values in the way I work with data in my newsroom?
One of the most important questions I think to ask there is, who does data work in your newsroom? How are you operationally defining that work? So do you expect journalists to do their own data work? Just like how we expect journalists now to be able to take videos on their own, to take photographs on their own, to sort of act as a one-stop shop for different kinds of work. Or do you want them to be, do you want that work to be coming from people who are sort of data scientists that you're trying to turn into journalists? That's sort of a different direction to go in. So you might want reporters that have skills to analyze data. And what the reporters can do then is bring their ethical values, bring their editorial perspectives to that data. That's one direction you could go in. The other is you might want data scientists, and you say, how can you teach data scientists to be reporters, where they're going to come with their data science perspectives and you're going to try to shape them into the editorial value of your work. But I think the overarching is that data is always sort of about a relationship to an audience. So you could also ask, you know, do you want to gather or analyze data with your audiences? That's another move that you could make. If you're the type of newsroom where you want to involve your audience in your news work, then you want to involve them in data gathering work. So you might want to go out and build data sets with them. There's an example, the Los Angeles Times here in Los Angeles was desperately trying to get their hands on a data set that said basically how safe buildings were in earthquakes. And the government had a data set that said how safe different buildings were in earthquakes. The government did not want to release that data because they didn't want the liability of saying which buildings were safe or not safe. It's a very American thing to be fearful of lawsuits. And people sort of operate that all the time. So the LA Times went out and built their own database of saying how safe are buildings in Los Angeles. That was an editorial value that they decided. They said, we care about the safety of our community. We're going to invest resources in building a data set that can tell people, is my building safe or not in an earthquake? Even if the government doesn't want them to have that data, or even if the government has that data and they don't want to give it up. So there's other examples, but that's just sort of one example of how you can have an editorial value of keeping your audience informed about public safety. And then you go pursue that editorial value by making a data set that doesn't exist, by inventing a new data set. And that's the intersection for journalism of data work and editorial value that is all over the place. Could be lots of different cases.
That is a great example, actually. You said you had more. Would you mind giving us maybe like one more so we can really understand how different the approach to the data can be depending on different editorial values?
Right. So the other one I would actually go back to is the ProPublica data set, which was talking about in the United States, we have rules about how prisoners are sentenced. And if you are found guilty of some crime, you have a particular sentence that you receive. There is strong evidence that people who are not white, mostly Black Americans and Latino Americans, receive longer sentences, harsher sentences, more sort of punishing sentences than people who are white. And so the ProPublica said, well, we think this might be the case. We would like to gather and create data to tell that story, but we need to build that data set because a lot of this either doesn't exist in government data sets or the government doesn't want to give us that data set. So they with a team of reporters, and this was a big investment of time and money and sort of effort to do this work, they built a data set where they were then able to systematically show, yes, if you are not white in America and you're found guilty of a crime, you will receive a harsher sentence than a white person who committed that same crime in that same jurisdiction. And that was data that did not exist. That was data, that was a story that could not be told in the same way until ProPublica said, we have an editorial value of trying to address systemic discrimination in the United States in the criminal justice system. In order to tell that story, we need data. So therefore, we need to make that data, gather that data, analyze that data. We need to turn ourselves into a kinds of data scientists and journalists at the same time. So that's sort of another example where I think we see that editorial value playing out in data work.
That's another great example. Thank you for that. I think we've talked now about how newsrooms work with data or can work with data in an ethical way that fits their values when it comes to collecting their own data, creating new data sets. When I'm thinking about a data-driven newsroom and I'm trying to put myself into the shoes of a newsroom manager in a data-driven newsroom, that's of course not what I'm always going to do. I'm going to work with a lot of external data as well. And I would like to go into the topic a little bit of problems that might arise if I work with data that I haven't collected myself. Is there maybe an example for something like that that you could talk about?
Yes. So one big example of a moment when news organizations have to work with data that's presented to them or given to them by other organizations, technology companies in particular, one big example came out of the 2016 election in the United States, the presidential election. And in the aftermath of that election, Facebook and to a lesser degree Twitter were understandably sort of accused of having spread mis and disinformation and essentially helped elect Donald Trump to the presidency in 2016. In response to that, Facebook said, okay, we are going to start working with fact checkers and news organizations to use their expertise to decide whether something should appear on our platform or not. So they formed this partnership. I had the chance to interview many people in this partnership and sort of do a case study of it. And what was fascinating is that they ended up building a dashboard. This partnership revolved around a data dashboard that I think actually represents a lot of the challenges and the opportunities that we're talking about today. So here's how it worked. So there was this dashboard, and it was sort of a fairly standard, you know, regular, typical dashboard, but it was a dashboard that Facebook developed. And what this dashboard did was it listed stories, posts that were on Facebook that Facebook thought were potentially false or misinformation or disinformation. And so Facebook said, we think these might be the stories that are false. They then served these stories or showed these stories to fact checkers. I talked to six different fact checking organizations and said, here's the stories we think are fake. You should go off and investigate them. And then so the journalists on the newsroom, and they had access to this, it was just a webpage, they would look at that list of stories, and then the fact checkers would decide which stories they wanted to work on. They would pick one of those stories off that, do the fact checking work. It would take sort of, you know, 2 days on average to research one of those stories and do it. And then they would post back into the dashboard their fact check, their decision about whether that was a fake story or not fake story, and giving some context and doing all of the rich journalistic work that fact checkers often do. And then Facebook would take that fact check and put it back into their algorithm system and then decide whether or not to show people that story with a fact check or whether to decrease the circulation percentage of that fact check. So that was sort of how it worked. But the thing I want to sort of focus on is that in the building of that dashboard, what ended up happening is that journalists had to rely on Facebook's understanding of what data meant. So one example in that is there was a column in the dashboard called popularity. And this popularity column was quite mysterious to the journalists I spoke to. They said, Facebook has decided that this is popular. They say this is the popular story. We have no idea what popular means. We have no idea if that means the story is trending. Did just a lot of people see it? Is there sort of a speed to that story that's progressing? And fact checkers, being good journalists, said, we cannot even fact check the very dashboard tool that we're using to do our fact checks. It became this kind of professional moment of crisis for them. And they said, how can we possibly partner with Facebook when we don't even understand the data view or the data variables that Facebook is presenting us? And Facebook understandably said, that's a proprietary sort of private, you know, secret sauce of what makes something popular or not. We're not going to tell you what makes something popular. And they had this standoff, and it was a very, you know, as a researcher, it was an interesting standoff, but I also think it's a standoff because it goes back to that ethics and editorial ethics question we were talking about earlier. If you as a journalist do not understand how you're doing the work you're doing, is that a partnership you should participate in? Is that a partnership you should try to change? Is that a partnership that maybe you should sort of resist and oppose and say, we don't want to be part of it? But it raised these questions where the news organizations had to get good very fast at asking critical questions of the data dashboard that Facebook had built.
That is a really, really interesting example. And I think being critical of the data you're working with is exactly the right phrase that we should focus on, I think. Because now we talked about a data set coming from Facebook, and, you know, I'm being polemic here, of course, but Facebook is kind of the bad guy in a lot of stories right now. So when data comes from Facebook, journalists are going to be reasonably skeptical of that data. But isn't that the same problem with data from any data source you're gathering?
Yes, absolutely. No, absolutely. And that's why I think going back to the questions of where did this data come from? Who made this data set? What interests or values are represented in a data set? So to use the popularity example really concretely for a minute, journalists who were part of this partnership with Facebook said, wait a second, we see stories circulating on Facebook that are not appearing in this list of popular stories. Why is that? And the smart ones immediately posed this question and said, are stories that are earning high advertising revenue not appearing in this list of popular stories because Facebook perhaps has some interest in hiding high earning stories from us in this fact-checking dashboard? And the answer to that is actually kind of unclear, and it's not sure, and Facebook denies it. And so you can sort of take them at their word. But the journalists were very skeptical and sort of said, wait a second, maybe there's this other value of advertising revenue that is appearing in this calculation of popularity. And we need to know more about that system. So that's an example of there's an interest that Facebook may or may not have had. It's very unclear to know because they won't show how the system works. But that's an example. There's an interest that's represented in that data set. And that's the kind of thing, if you're a news organization, you have to know your own editorial values well enough in order to then interrogate the data set that you may be given or that you may get. And you need to ask questions like, does this data set represent everyone in the population that I'm interested in? Are there any patterns of either inclusion or exclusion in this data set that then would affect the quality of the story that I can tell with that data set? And that's going to be different for every data set that you encounter and every context you encounter and every story you have. But what I would recommend journalists being able to do is very quickly be able to, you need to be able to have, you know, five questions that you ask of every data set in your newsroom. And every data set that comes into your newsroom should be vetted and should be critically questioned for your news values. So that means you have to know what your news values are. You have to know what those five questions are. That's going to look different for every newsroom. That's okay. That's what we want, a diversity of questions and approaches. But you kind of have to know what those questions are.
You're raising a very good point here when it comes to being careful with data sets you're given, but also, of course, with data sets you're collecting, especially with that point, and I think we're going to talk about this more a bit later, exclusions or inclusions in the data. But let me first go to a different point as well, because in a lot of things that we talked about now, and I think you mentioned it explicitly when you talked about, okay, are we turning our journalists a bit into data experts, or are we taking data experts and teaching them to be journalists? That there is, of course, a very specific skill set that of a data expert that is necessary to explore these possibilities in the data fully. And a lot of newsrooms might not have the budget, might not have that kind of know-how, but still might want to work with data because it's in the last years, you know it yourself, it became such a big topic and such an important thing. So they're going to be using ready-made tools. And when it comes to those tools, I think is the point where we hear this little bit of a buzzword that I mentioned before of algorithmic bias, where we might get results from tools that we're using to work with data that might not be what we think they are, those results. So maybe we can talk a little bit about that and try to help newsrooms that don't have a specific data expert but might have some data enthusiasts and some tools at the ready to use with data. So what are problems then if I'm using kind of a black box to work with the data I'm getting, even if I'm skeptical towards the data?
Right, right. No, that's a really good point. The big one, and we can touch on this more maybe when we talk about algorithmic bias in other senses, but one of the big issues that comes up whenever you're using a machine learning or a tool that's driven by artificial intelligence is those tools are always looking for patterns in very large data sets, and they've been trained to find some patterns, but they have not been trained to find other patterns. So every tool, every black box that enters the newsroom that promises, I will take your big, messy data set, I will take some big mess of data, and I will teach you what the patterns are in that data set. And that's an understandable move for a newsroom that can't afford their own data science team that's going to do these things from scratch. Every tool that promises to automatically find patterns for you has been trained to look for patterns in a particular way. So one thing you want to ask is, how were those tools trained? What were the data sets that were used to train those tools? So to be concrete, if you have a dashboard kind of tool that says, I will analyze your audience patterns for you and find out where the most lucrative readers are coming from, or what the best time of day is to post a story, or how long your headline should be, should it be shorter or longer? You want to ask, well, did you train those algorithmic systems on a newsroom data that looks like my newsroom data? Like if you're a small local news organization and you're buying a tool that's been trained on, a diverse set of international data sets that includes, the New York Times and Times of London or Wall Street Journal, you have these very large sort of enterprise organizations. If that's the data set that has trained those tools, you need to say, wait a second, maybe I actually don't want a type of value that is all about driving clicks to get people to click on more stories. That's what that tool is going to tell you. It's going to tell you, here's how to get people to click on more stories. You might say, I actually want a tool that helps people stay on a story for longer, because maybe you want them reading, you want them spending more time on your page. You want them reading that. Or maybe you want a story that helps them leave a comment on a story, and you want to ask, so what leads to somebody leading a comment on a story or not? All of those kinds of very subtle decisions can get baked into a black box that is presented to you. So you want to ask of any of those black boxes that make their way into your newsroom, are those the editorial values that we have? And that, I think that also comes true in, the use of these black box tools to control distribution of stories. So there's tools, either whether it's Google Analytics or Chartbeat or NewsWhip or CrowdTangle, or there's a lot of sort of tools like that news organizations can buy off the shelf. They promise trends. They promise to show which stories are popular, which stories earn the most advertising revenue, what headlines perform best. Some of them are really uncomfortable. You can decide whether reporters should have profiles where you can see which are your highest earning reporters, which reporters typically tend to write the stories that earn most advertising revenue. You need to decide as a newsroom, do you want to reward your reporters like that or not? And that's a business decision than an editorial decision. But we might not want a news organization that simply rewards reporters who consistently earn high advertising revenue. Anyway, there's more examples, but those are the kinds of things that I would ask of a black box that shows up in your newsroom.
Maybe to make this a little bit more clearer as well, maybe we can just flip this around a little bit. And like before, we started with a newsroom that maybe doesn't have as much expertise and therefore uses those kind of tools. Let's now just maybe for the sake of the argument assume that we are in a newsroom that has a data team that is a bit further along when it comes to working with data in the newsroom, and they want to build some kind of tool themselves. What would you say are things that should really, like thoughts that should really go into building your own tool in a data-driven newsroom?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think it goes back to the editorial values question. So I would actually answer that question not with a sense of a computational technique, but with a sense of a journalism and editorial value answer that I think I would do it with. So one is to say, where are the data coming from that you want to experiment with? So if you've gathered that data yourself, have you sampled or surveyed a population that is the population you think you're speaking about. And there's lots of examples of people who think they're surveying a population but end up leaving out or excluding people.
Can you give an example for that?
I mean, the examples usually come from not necessarily journalistic examples, but AI system examples. So it's a little slightly different context, but here's an example of a system. So when Nikon developed a camera algorithm to try to detect whether people had their eyes open or not, they trained that data set on people with white skin and sort of broader eyes. What happened was when you were using a Nikon camera and you were taking a picture of an Asian person that maybe had a narrower eye, the Nikon camera algorithm thought that person had their eyes closed. And very correctly, there was sort of an uproar that said, this is a racist camera because it's not doing that properly. What had ended up happening was that Nikon had trained the AI system to detect whether somebody had their eyes open or not on a population that was white and had a particular shape of an eye. And that was how it happened. There's another example, Google Photo algorithms was automatic. So a lot of these are related to race, honestly, to race and exclusion. Google Photos was automatically labeling images and for a period of time labeled black people as gorillas in their photo images. That was a sort of racist example of how a pattern of photo analysis made its way into a supposedly neutral objective labeling system. We have an example that's unfolding right now in the United States where a lot of universities are moving to online education systems where students are being put in front of, you know, your camera on your laptop that has to detect where your face is so that when you're taking a test, they want to make sure you're not cheating. So this face detection system is trying to track a face within a field of a camera. There's a growing evidence that people with dark skin are having to use very harsh lights to light up their faces because otherwise the facial detection system thinks that they're cheating because it can't find their face. But it's because the AI, the algorithm trying to determine where the face is, that algorithm was trained on white faces. And it was trained to not find black faces. Those aren't necessarily journalistic examples within the newsroom, but what they are is they're examples that show how the data that you use to train the pattern matching system will contain biases, will contain patterns. And as a journalist, you want to ask, am I just recreating those structural inequalities or those discrimination patterns when I use those tools? And I go back to the prison sentencing example. We know that prisoners in the United States, that's a fairly racist system, that black people are being punished longer and more harshly than white people. So you could say, now the current debate's happening is, should you use algorithms that have been trained on those data sets to make recommendations? So should we give those to judges to make recommendations about setting bail or setting a sentence in the United States? If you build an algorithm that's based on the current data patterns, you will recreate a racist and discriminatory system that then says to judges, you should sentence that person this way and that other person this way. What ends up happening is there's a feedback loop that comes from data sets that have biases built into them. So if you're a newsroom, know what's in those data sets that you are creating. Know what patterns you're looking at. And then the last bit I'll add is to say, all of this is probabilistic. All of this is statistical. So an AI is never going to make a judgment based on a whole bunch of different criteria. What an AI is going to do is add up probabilities and say, there is an 83% chance that person has their eyes open, or there's a 97% chance that you should sentence that person this way. It's always going to present those percentages to you. So the last thing is you want to think about is, what is your threshold for percentages? How wrong do you want to be in your analysis? What type of error are you willing to withstand, or what type of error are you okay with? So always know your error rates. That's the big thing I would say, is how certain do you want to be in your analysis? maybe 97% is good for enough for you, or maybe you say, no, that other 3% is actually quite harmful and dangerous. So we need to wait. We need to build a better system. We need to get more data sets. We need to tweak our algorithm. So know what kind of error you're willing to put up with.
Very, very minority report, what you're telling me there.
Yes. And it
really loops back quite beautifully to what we talked about before, that the beginning of data in the newsroom was kind of the idea that maybe through data we would get a more neutral, less biased view of the world. And now we see that it can be quite the opposite, and we can end up recreating discriminatory patterns that we want to avoid. So how can we prevent something like that happening to us in our newsroom?
Right. So the first thing I would say is know how and why you are gathering data. Know how and why you are making assumptions about the populations that you are sampling. Know which patterns your AI is paying attention to, and brainstorm, get creative on which patterns you may be missing. And even if your algorithm is not showing you a pattern, pause and ask, where might that pattern be? How can I find it? And that's where for journalists, maybe you don't need data to answer that question. Maybe you actually, that's a time for more of a narrative journalistic storytelling, going out and interviewing people and trying to uncover it. So don't assume that the data are going to tell you the full story. And then the last thing I'll say is know what amount of error or certainty you want in your data stories, because all data stories will be a little bit wrong. They will all have a little bit of error in them. Know what that error is and know what amount of error you're willing to put up with in your stories and be able to defend it. Because the biggest thing I would say for journalists is that if you want to make your own data systems, if you want to roll your own data systems, you will be held accountable and you will be held responsible for the types of conclusions that those systems are making. You need to be able to provide a transparent account of every single step that you took along the way from gathering the data to telling that final story. Document every decision you've made. Document every design move you made. Document every tool that you've used, every data set you've used, so that you can give the public, you can give your audiences a sense of where your conclusions came from. And that's a kind of a transparency that data scientists are often not doing, but I think journalists who need to be publicly accountable need to tell us how they got their conclusions. And the phrase in the United States often uses, show us your work. So you need to show us your work. If you cannot show us your work, or if you are uncertain about showing us your work, that's a problem. Pause, think.
I think that's a really, really good point. And of course, that is true for both a case of where we want to do data journalism in the sense that we want to enrich stories with data or find stories in data, as we talked about in the beginning. But of course, that is also true for all other editorial decisions, right? When we talk about what do we measure from our readers when it comes to, you mentioned that before as well, when it comes to what is success for us in an article or something, what are we actually measuring, right?
Yes, absolutely. Right. I mean, I think that's the right way to think about it, is know what your metrics of success are. And also know that journalism is about an ongoing cultivation and relationship to an audience. So I think that's the public service dimension of journalism. That's what makes journalism different from other kinds of, content production professions. Journalism is not about that. Journalism also has this public service dimension to it. And I think part of that is about making your audience smarter, about helping your audience understand the decisions that you've made. You're not trying to persuade them or convince them or, trick them into thinking something. You're trying to go on a journey with your audience and help your audience become smarter as you become smarter.
And that, of course, is also a data journey that you're going on with your users as well. So when it comes to that.
Yes. Absolutely.
Thank you for that. I think that's a really nice way to kind of get us back to the beginning of our talk. And just to tie the bow around our conversation now, Let me just finish by maybe asking you your top three tips for newsroom managers listening right now and for newsroom managers everywhere. Whether I'm starting to work with data now because I want to make my newsroom more data-driven, or whether I'm working with data already but want to get better at working with data, what would you say are your top three tips for those newsrooms that want to work with their data in a better, less biased, and more ethical way?
My top three recommendations are, first, make sure that you have a diverse staff. Make sure that you have a newsroom that looks like the audiences that you want to serve, a newsroom that is able to ask critical questions, that has a culture that is empowered to ask critical questions, that has a sense of security and investment in the public service. And that comes from a diversity of people, that comes from an open newsroom culture where you can ask hard questions of people who are in positions of power within the newsroom. So cultivate that newsroom culture, I think, was the first one. The second one, as I would say, is build deep literacy with data and data platforms. And that literacy can look different in different newsrooms. If you're the kind of newsroom that is making your own systems, then you need to be able to ask more sophisticated questions like the ones we've been talking about where did data come from and how do you want to build your system and what level of certainty and those types of things. But if you're using off-the-shelf products, as a lot of newsrooms are, that's a different kind of data literacy where you need to, before you license tools, before you purchase tools, have those, you know, five critical questions that you need to ask of that tool before it shows up in your newsroom. So that's a kind of literacy that newsrooms need to have around data. So never have a black box in your newsroom that you don't know how that works. That's a data literacy problem. And then the third recommendation I would make goes back to, I think, what we started with, but is know your own editorial values. Know what those values are. Know what types of journalism you want to be doing, what types of audiences you want to be serving, what types of outcomes you want to have in your reporting. Those are questions that may not seem like data questions at first, but unless you know what your values are, it's going to make it very hard to interrogate those data systems or build that diverse newsroom. So you have to know what your values are, and you have to state those values very clearly so that they can drive the critical perspective that you have in your newsroom and with your data tools.
Mike, that's a wonderful final answer, because I notice, and it makes me very happy, that you're not just a data expert, you're also a data idealist. And I think that's something that is really at the heart of newsrooms that want to work with data without making those mistakes that we talked about now in many different ways. Mike, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. It was a pleasure talking to you, and I wish you all the best and goodbye.
Thank you very much.
Damit sind wir am Ende dieser Folge des Media Lab Innovation Podcasts. Die anderen Folgen findet ihr überall, wo es Podcasts gibt, und mehr Infos zu diesem und allen möglichen anderen Innovationsthemen findet ihr auch auf media-lab.de. Ich freue mich, wenn ihr auch ein paar der anderen Folgen spannend findet, und wünsche euch schon mal viel Spaß beim Hören. Bleibt innovativ!